Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, Blog Talk Radio once again, and we have Jillian, and she's with us, and she has written three or four books, and two of which, if you will, I've been going over The Violet Flames, so I've done that, and then now I'm into Return of the Anunnaki. It's very interesting. Jillian, nice to have you once again.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
I'm going through this book here that people can get if they go to nohoax.net. So maybe discuss this book a minute or two, if you will. I have questions.
Which one? The booklet, Return of the Anunnaki, is that what you're speaking about?
Yes.
Is that the one you were talking about? Yes. That was many more people know my late husband, George, than know me, and George was doing a weekend lecture in London in 2011, and the people who were attending the lecture asked me if I would speak for an hour or two about the Anunnaki. And so I prepared that little booklet as a handout so they could have some idea of the background of the story. And basically that little booklet is a condensed version of mostly the Anunnaki's cosmology and their intentions with regard to this planet, how they came here, why they're here, and what their reason for returning is. So as you know, it's just a small booklet. I don't know how many pages, maybe a dozen or so pages, but it really does encompass all the essentials of their cosmology.
I have 20 pages here. And so awesome. Let's talk about that just briefly, because I was just going over, and I have some questions on that. Now, it says, long, long ago, in the far reaches of space, a light shone, and a great creation came into being. So let's talk about that. So you're saying that the Anunnaki, based on your knowledge and history, when the Earth was formed, or this universe was formed, they came along with it?
Yes.
In the beginning.
Well, soon after the beginning, not the very beginning. First in their cosmology, in their story of history, first came the universe. And then after the development of the universe, there came the angelic species. And from amongst those angelic species, meaning messengers, the word angel, as you know, means messenger. Among those messenger species, a large number were sent down into the creation, not Earth, because Earth did not exist at that time, into the creation as it was then, to start reporting on it, which they did, and which they have continued to do up to this date. Now, after many, many hundreds of thousands of years, a large number of these beings decided to return to their place of origin, and a number of them decided to stay and continue their work observing and reporting within the creation. During that time, of course, you had the evolution of many, many solar systems, and one of the newer ones in the universe was formed after the collision of Tiamat with another body, which produced Earth and Kingu, its moon. Which, of course, belies the story that the moon is an artificial object, because it's been there in the ancient Anuna records from the beginning. It was part of the upheaval that occurred with the collision with Tiamat and producing not only the Earth and the moon, but also the asteroid belt that we know today. So that is their beginning story. And they make this story as the manifestation into reality, physical reality, three-dimensional reality, of intelligent light. They say that everything in the universe is made from light, and that every particle of light has an instruction in the beginning when it left the source of what it was supposed to manifest as, and that this is spoken of in the Bible, for instance, where it says, in the beginning, God knew the end. You know, there's something that says something like that. And this is what they're talking about, that the end was known in the beginning because it was known what instruction every piece of light was given. So it was known how it would manifest, fundamental to their cosmology. And they themselves were the ones who, the Anuna, were the ones who descended into the three-dimensional reality, took on physical bodies of their own, and continued throughout our universe's history as a space-faring race of beings who we still have with us today.
And you say some decided to take on bodies and come here to report on the development of what was going on, and some remained on the eighth dimension, if you will. Maybe I'm using the wrong term, but and decided to stay with the beginning of this whole thing. Is that right?
Right, right.
Uh-huh. Why would some come to do the observation and reporting back and some stay where they were?
Well, not to be facetious about it, it's exactly the same reason as how some people like to go to sea and other people don't, right? Every individual being has different tastes. Some of the Anuna were made, I don't want to say they were made sick. They didn't like what was developing in the universe. They were not happy participating in it. They no longer wished to be part of the observer group that was watching this development. They wanted to go back home to their purely spiritual light being selves, being located near the source and distant, very, very distant from anything that was happening in the universe, the physically real universe. Whereas others, a lesser number of them, had actually come to love what they were seeing in the physically real creation. They loved seeing it. They loved watching the evolution. Realize that throughout time, from the beginning of our universe, however many millions and billions of years ago that was, there have been many, many solar systems have come into being and gone extinct. Many great civilizations have risen and gone extinct. Things rise and things fall in cyclical motion throughout life, from the beginning until its ultimate unknown end. And so there were those among the Anuna who loved this creation, who really enjoyed it and became more and more involved. Now, unfortunately, it is a true thing that the more dense you become, the heavier you become, the more entwined with the physical realities you become, the harder it is to stay true to your spiritual beginnings. And this is true of every soul in existence, not just the Anuna. It's the trial that we are all struggling with, that eternally we are beings of spirit experiencing in a physically real universe, and the physicality of this universe ties us to it. We become enmeshed with it. We become weighed down with it. And this is what happened to the Anuna. They became so involved that they began to forget who they were. They became arguesome among themselves. They had difficulties among themselves. And remember that their difficulties were primarily family. They were family to one another. They were like one large family. And they were all, you might say, like siblings, falling out with one another, constantly disagreeing. And the more tied to the physical realities they became, the more they became difficult with one another, troublesome, arguesome, warlike even. And they did have fights and battles and wars with one another as they degenerated from their original true state of being pure beings of light. Right through the ages, they had degenerated considerably to the point now where most Anunnaki would acknowledge themselves that they aren't so far removed from us at this present time, although their capabilities used to make them seem godlike to us now. In this present day, we would recognize them as, we'd say, we would use the phrase, well, they're no better than us. That's what we would say about them. If we were interacting with them and, you know, on board their ships or whatever, we would probably come back with the idea, well, they're no better than us. The best of us is just as good as they are. So it is interesting that they are, of course, our first cousins in the universe, and they are actually the only extraterrestrial race, so far as I'm aware, that Earth humans are truly genetically related to. And that was because of the Anunnaki doing the original genetic engineering on humans on this planet millennia ago.
So I understand, too, as I'm reading this, that they had reached immortality in terms of their lifespan?
They are immortal beings. They began as immortal beings. This is something, Russell, that I am contending with, or I find it contentious when I read so much that is being written about these beings today, almost more than any other species. Every other extraterrestrial species, with the exception of the reptilians are not part of the human race at all. All other species that we know about, you know, the Nordics, the Reticulans, that are all these that we read about in the books, they are all part of the human species because it is the human species that has evolved in this universe. You might say this universe is the human universe. It's designed for the development of humans, all shapes, all sizes, all colors, doesn't make any difference. We're all part of the greater human family, with the exception of the reptilians. Now, the difference with the Anuna is that they did not start as part of a developing physical reality. They started as angelic beings of pure spirit who came down already completely formed as angelic beings, beings of light. They came down into the creation. They did not evolve out of the creation, as did every other form of humanity. And as far as I know, there are no other species like the Anuna. It is possible that they have a relationship with the Hathors of Andromeda. And the reason I say this is because Akhenaten and his wife Nefertiti, they were themselves from Andromeda. They were Andromedans who came to this earth, incarnated on this earth, for the purpose. Akhenaten's purpose was to bring the truth of one living creative God, one living creative source of all light in the all life in the universe. And of course, they hounded him to death. You know, the priests of Ra poisoned him and drove him into the swamps, and he died there. His body was never found, or it wasn't found till he was long dead. Put it that way. So that it's possible that the family of Akhenaten, the Hathor family out of Andromeda, may themselves be an offshoot or a relationship with the Andromeda, with the Anunnaki. I don't know this for sure. It's just something I think is possibly possible. They might be relations, let's put it that way, or the same same breed, same lineage as the Anunnaki, simply because they were the ones who introduced the concept of one living God. That was their job. And that really is the job of the Anunnaki as well, to make people understand that there is mystery, great mystery, right? That it's not a wavy one kind of magic. It's simply a great mystery of the universe. And that one day, science will unravel it all. We will one day be capable of understanding it all. But I think the Anunnaki intent is, first of all, at this point in their history, of those that remained in our universe, more than half of them wish now to return to their former state. They've come to the end of where they want, what they want to experience in this universe. They have feel that they have rebalanced their karmic issues over the whole Christ thing, which was a big chaos to them. And now those who supported that issue wish to return to their original state and to leave this physical universe permanently, to move back into timelessness. There's still a percentage, though, and predominantly the percentage that wish to stay are descendants of the Enki, namely Marduk and his Igigi. And the reason for that is that when they were here before, many of them took wives of Earth humans. There's a great many descendants of these hybrid families. And we all know the stories, like the story of Gilgamesh and so on and so forth. There are many of these stories. Noah was a hybrid, Gilgamesh was a hybrid, and so on. So there are today on the planet many descendants of their original families, and they simply wish to return to Earth, to reconnect with their issue, to continue with their human families here on Earth, probably to take human women again, I would expect. But it is their wish to return here, and they will. They will return to this planet.
That's interesting. I'm thinking about why would, no, a couple of things that you were going over, and I wanted to ask a number of questions here. If they have conquered death, if you will, right? William Tompkins talked about that a bit, and may I just click this on? William Tompkins, he left us a couple of years ago, and he was saying that as contrast to what most people understand, that there's infinite life among the beings. I got three questions, and I don't know what to ask. Let Tompkins talk.
There again, a lot of people don't believe that they have many lives, okay? Some have more than others.
Oh,
okay?
Yeah, absolutely. I
but
believe
we that. Don't just die here and that's it.
Sure.
Okay, we've got a whole lot of other stuff we got to do, okay? And so TRW, again, in their programming on that particular subject, actually told John Walder almost the date that he was going to step out.
Oh, okay.
And told him which of seven different previous lives he was going to relive. New versions of. And I thought that was kind of cool.
Right.
Now, I can't prove that. I'm only saying this is what he tells me.
Well, it makes sense.
And I'm saying that I personally, my wife and I, we and our family believes that, you know, this is only part-time here.
Mm-hmm.
You got a real job out there.
Sure.
And so there's got to be that relationship. Yes.
Right. Let's assume that that's true. That can you, will you confirm that that's true? That we can live many lives, many, many, many lives? The human beings who
yes,
are born today.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
You know, with reincarnation, the matter of reincarnation, I've never asked anyone to believe me when I've talked about it. I've simply said, when you die, you will find out the truth of it. So, you know, so don't let it be a shock to you if you think there is no such thing and then you die and you suddenly discover you're lined up for another lifetime and it might not be the one you want, right? It might be one that you would much rather not live. So, yes, life is perpetual. But, you know, I would say this, right, that life itself is life. Really, birth and death in the things, in the way we think of it. Birth and death is like moving house. you are simply moving to the new place where you're living. How many times have people moved in a lifetime, changed their job, changed the house they live in, right? Changed their car. So if you think of your body as being no more than housing for your spirit, which is what it is, or a car for you to drive your spirit around in, which is what it is, right? Then you get the idea that you could be driving it here on earth, or you can go down the freeway to a different state and start driving it around in a different location. And I made a comment that's going in, I hope, into that book that we're working on, Russell, the other day, because it came to me as a way of understanding from spirit. And this is what they said to me. They said, wherever you find light and joy and harmony, there you find heaven. And wherever you find darkness, disharmony, and chaos, there you find hell. And neither one is about location. So it doesn't matter whether you're in a physical body or a spiritual form. In other words, with or without a body, you are you, no matter which side of the line you are experiencing on the physically sensory side of the line, which we call life on earth or three-dimensional reality, or the reality of those planes that are not physically real but have a different dimensional experience. It is still you, and you are still experiencing that life. There's no difference. And we call the process of getting, packing up house and moving from one location to another, we call those processes birth and death. But if you were on the other side, you were dying to the other side and being to be born to this one. You die to this one to be born to the other one. And there are more than one dimension that, or more than one location that you can go through. You know, what does Christ say? In my Father's house are many mansions. So there are many doorways for us to go through and experience life. But it is all us, and it is all life. Doesn't matter where it is. It's the same.
So the human being born here has chosen to come? For instance, the people, 9 billion people here, 9 billion or there about, maybe more. Mm-hmm. It's growing every day. They have chosen to come to exist on this planet at this time. Yes or no?
Yes. 99.9%. There might be one or two who objected to coming and got thrown down here anyway. But as a general rule, yes, you have chosen to come. You might not have chosen the life that you have got. But when you ask for a life, you have to get, you have to take what you are given. And the way that it seems to work is that the better you do in one life, the more choice you will have of what you will experience in the next. Now, this doesn't matter whether it's on the planet or off the planet, you know, physically real incarnation or into the spiritual realms. Either way, if you do well in the spiritual realms, if you're a good, helpful guardian angel to somebody for 50 years, and you've done really well and everybody's pleased with you, they'll say, well, you know, would you like a turn at life on earth? What kind of life would you like? And then you get the chance to specify. But on the other hand, if you have been really wasteful in this life here on earth, and you got to the other side and you weren't even sorry for the message you made, and you're generally not doing very well as a character, right? They're going to say to you, well, you really need to get down to that planet and experience another lifetime because you have a lot to learn still. And you're going to have to do a lot better than you did the previous time. So last time you were there, you had a comfortable home, a good chance of a good education and reasonable health all your life. Well, you're not going to get it so easy this time because you didn't do well. You're going to have to learn a harder lesson. So I'm paraphrasing here, of course, but generally speaking, we choose the experiences that will be most helpful in advancing our spiritual growth, because that ultimately is the goal of every soul, that it evolves, that it develops, that it improves, that it adds energy to itself. And in this garnering of energy, we need testing experiences. So generally speaking, we do not choose easy lives for ourselves. Sometimes when we've had a lot of hard lessons on and off the planet, in and out of lives for years, and we have done reasonably well, we might say, well, I love life on planet Earth, really, and I just would like to go down there just one time and enjoy it, really have a trouble-free life. And that does happen. I've actually met two people in my lifetime, this lifetime, who were doing exactly that. They came for no purpose at all except to be happy. And I think ultimately that is the goal of our Creator, that we should enjoy the creation, we should be happy, and in the process we should be evolving.
I'm looking
that
at
seems to be the name of the game.
Okay. So the Anunnaki who have decided to leave from wherever they were, Nibiru or whatever, on the spaceship, and come here on Earth, on the planet Earth, among us, they have volunteered. What are they volunteering to do? Would you say they are volunteering to correct some of the things that they didn't do right last time when they
I don't think that it's, but it's not volunteering. It's something they want to do, and they feel they have an obligation to do it in order to correct their own karmic issues, which are the mistakes they made with the original genetic engineering of the human species. You know, much of what we have done that is damaging to ourselves and to the planet, particularly our warlike tendencies, and a lot of the ills and ailments that cause so much pain and suffering physically on this planet, are as a result, direct result, of the very poor quality of genetic engineering that was done in the first place. So, yes, the Anunna have a great deal of karma that they wish to correct. And in fact, their corrective program began 2,000 years ago, of course, with the advent of Christ on the planet, because that was his fundamental job, was to teach people how to live better lives. As you know, he taught the Essene principles of living. He was raised as an Essene, and that particular culture was taken away from humanity through the teachings of most of the churches in the Middle Ages. We lost most of those peaceful and profound teachings. And so we are really in pretty much a mess. And the reason we're in such a mess is because we were engineered with certain fundamental things altered that produced negative results, that did not produce desirable results. And that has to be corrected. And the reason, I was going to say, the reason that they have waited so long to make these corrections is because a big part of the mistake was doing it in the first place. They shouldn't have interfered. And so they have waited until the humans on Earth had become capable of mapping the human genome themselves, so that now the Anunnaki do not have to do the genetic engineering. They will simply be here to teach the Earth humans how to do it for themselves. And that will be a big part of their return, as well as much of the logistics necessary to replenish the planet itself, to restore it to a more pristine state.
Mm-hmm. So are they doing that? When I look at Royal Rife or Tesla or some of the people who have come down here to do some work, are they trying to correct the ills that were made by the Anunnaki when they tackled the human being, if you will, tackle to in terms of adjusting that individual to do whatever they wanted him to do in terms of the getting out the goals and all of that stuff, right?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. That's absolutely correct.
Uh-huh. Specifically, I understood that they took four, whatever they talked, what was it,
four deals. They took four human genes out and replaced it with only two of their own. There's a lot of, so there's, you know, I only know, as you know, Russell, I'm no scholar. I have no academic qualifications whatsoever. And a lot of the things that I read, I have no knowledge of personally, right? So when people are talking about, you know, the Anunnaki and the 12-string DNA and all this that you read about today, I don't know what they're talking about. All I know is what I know from my own memories and from absolutely uninterrupted consciousness for tens of thousands of years, plus the fact that, of course, I talk to them, have done all my life, and to a lesser degree now in my old age, I still communicate with them. But anything that I know or say is either my own memory or directly from my Anuna friends. And so my Anuna family, I want to say, because, you know, they're related. So I'm not sure what science is putting out there now about the multiple string DNA. I don't understand that, and I don't have the education to know what they're talking about. But I do know that when the original engineering was done, they took out four genes and they replaced it with two of their own. And these two genes, no matter how much damage they did or how faulty the engineering was or how much trouble it has caused since in the last umpteen thousand years since it was done, right? The reality is that it was the greatest gift that has ever been given to an evolving species in the universe. And this is why all other species of humans throughout the universe, even the reptilians, they want an in with Earth humanity, because we are the only beings who have evolved out of a created three-dimensional reality and being imbued with immortal genes. To the best of my knowledge, there is no other species in the universe that has that. Did you get what I said?
Because
of that genetic experience of being given two of the Anunnaki genes, we have the potential for immortality by doing genetic engineering on us anymore, not by doing special techniques to give us longevity like the Pleiadians do or different species do, not by advancing our technology to such a degree that they can prolong this life in this body as long as they want to, as the Greys, for example, do, right? None of that. What we have as an Earth human species, and I hold this to be true with every breath in my body, right? We have the gift of immortality through those two genes that were grafted into our DNA 30,000 years ago in the experimental stages of developing Homo sapiens sapiens. Those two genes were given to us by an already immortal race of beings who put their potential immortality into us. And that is Christ's message when he came and said to us, you can do everything I do and more. He was able to say that to us and not to any other species in the universe. Let us not forget that. The Christ has never been to any other species and told them that. He only told it to Earth humans.
Wait. Now, there are billions and billions and hundreds of billions and trillions of planets out there. Now, you have you're talking about in this quadrant of the universe, of what we know of this universe, but we don't know the Andromeda or something way far beyond. You don't have that information yet. Can we agree? You don't know the makeup of the entire universe. But in terms of your history, and as you understand it, with Zachariah Sitchin's being one of the foremost authorities on this, right? That's, you understand it to this degree as you articulating it at this time, right?
Yes.
Hello? Yes or no?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
What's the point you're making?
No, I'm making the point because you're saying that it's almost like this is it. It's a final deal, and people should understand that the Anunnaki did a favor to the human being in some respect, even though
right.
there was a
mistake.
Okay, but you don't know the vastness of all the entities beyond the scope that you have learned, with the bit you have learned, but you say you've 20,000 years, 40,000 years you've been here, right? You don't know the entire nature of all things.
Still,
right?
I don't think I've ever claimed to know everything in the universe.
No.
I've only ever claimed to know what I know about the Anunnaki.
And this is
what I know about the Anunnaki.
Okay, good. That's good. I just wanted you to clarify that because beyond the stories that we have learned and that you're teaching us, there may be some other stories out there that we don't know yet. Yes
I'm sure there are. I'm sure there are millions of other stories out there.
Okay.
Right?
Let me
all I'm telling you is one essential piece of the universal truth of life, and that is that Earth humans have the potential for immortality.
Right. Now, Tompkins, and I'm going to do this and ask the next question. Tompkins talked about that the scientists he was working with have developed some semblances of that. Here he is.
Okay, back to extended life. As it is sort of addressed today, what you do is you take an aspirin-sized pill, one every month for 4 months, okay? Or it could be an injection. Immediately, you start feeling much better, okay? Immediately, you start feeling much better. At the end of, or probably way before, 4 months, the guys revert back to the latest number is 29. I've heard 23. I've heard all different dates. But say you go back to 29. So you've got everything physically that you had at that age, muscular, everything. And the young ladies go back to 21, okay? You have everything that you had at that point. Plus, you have a minimum of 400% greater capability of your brain.
Now, did you knew something about that, but did you understand that bit? But the scientists
I didn't know who he was talking about. Who was he talking about doing that?
He was saying that the Nordics were doing that with.
Oh,
with
the Nordics. Okay.
Yes. So did you know that?
Yeah, absolutely. You can reduce lengthen the telomeres. This is not just Nordics or even Pleiadians or any of the other extraterrestrials. Our own scientists know how to do this. This lengthening the telomeres is fairly new science, but it's also well known and potentially a very practical process. And I'm sure that there are those among the very rich the wealthy people of this world who take advantage of similar treatments to that, if not as advanced. Certainly the principle is the same.
So that would give you an extended life beyond what most people understand, you get to 100 years, 1,000 years, or beyond, right? Yes?
Right, yes.
But now, I just want to get back to the Anunnaki. They are immortal. They can live thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of years. Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. David, is he doing the same thing? Or Christ,
yes.
Jesus, is he doing the same thing?
Yes. Yes.
Now, so they could come in and out of this existence whenever they decide to.
Yes, but you, yes, well, some of them can. Both Christ and David that I know of, and there are more, those are the two that I personally know, they are both what they refer to as time lords, meaning they have evolved beyond the number 50, where they can be both in and out of time at will. And that means that they can be in their spirit form doing whatever they want to do outside time, or they can step into time and recreate a body for their use at any time they wish, in any time frame they wish, past, present, or future. So there are very few of these great time lords in the universe. I once asked David how many, and he said, oh, probably not more than 3,000 or 4,000 in the entire universe, right? That was a statement about the entire universe, not just our little quadrant of it. The one we knew as Christ, of course, is the master of this quadrant of the universe and has been for a long time. He's the ruler here. And so overseer, if you like, however you want to look at it. But yes, they live a long time. But you also have to remember, 1 year to one of the Anunnaki is 3,600 years to us here on Earth. We talked about this the other day, that time is measured by the orbit of the planet on which you are making home, your home planet. And as the 12th planet, or the crossing planet, the one they named Nibiru, is the current home planet of the Anunnaki, then they are measuring one of their years as 3,600 of our years. In that context, I was alive continuously on this planet from about 14,500 years ago for the following 10,000 years. Continuously, without dying. But because I was in my Anunnaki body, that was only like, 3 years?
But still, even 3 years, look, that's over 10,000 years.
Right.
In our time. So what did you do with all that time? Most people live until they're 60, 70, maybe 80, maybe get to 90 or 100, but that's rare.
Well, there's always things to do. There are always things to do. And remember that 10, 14,000 years ago, when I came back to the planet, I'd already been here 400,000 years previously, but when I came back 14,500 years ago, it was coming towards the end of an ice age. The planet was warming up. It was getting very pleasant to be here again. The development of man was moving along very nicely. And we all played roles in that. We played, but I was, of course, just a young girl. In Anunnaki terms, I was a teenager at the time, like a 17-year-old or an 18-year-old would be. I was still a teenager. But nonetheless, I played my role. One of my roles was teaching kindergarten. I was always gifted with numbers. And one of my teaching roles was always, throughout the whole time, that whole period, was in various schools where I taught numbers and counting and forms of accounting, forms of keeping records and record keeping, logistics. I was one of the things I was trained for was logistics. And this is something that I was teaching. That was really my only contact at that time with Earth humans. It wasn't until much later that I got more contact. After the flood, when the Pharaonic era started, then I was for a long time at the temple at Karnak. I was a temple sister at the temple of Karnak. And in fact, one of the great memories of my life is how the two priests, the head priests, used to go out at night and plug in to the pyramid and light up a pyramid and light up the, you know, the power station and light up the city of Karnak. It was every night, it was like a Christmas tree with all the lights coming on. As soon as the sun was set, the great cable was taken from the temple and plugged in, and the whole city lit up. It was beautiful. So a lot of experiences I remember from those lives.
Okay, but you were in Peru too. Before we get to Peru, what are the pyramids for? Why are the people don't even know how they were built? Number one, since you were here before the building of the pyramids, right? Yes?
No.
How were they?
No.
No.
The Great Pyramid was one of the first constructions done. The other pyramids, well, yes, but the other pyramids were done later when they tried to copy the construction. The Earth humans, after they were put in positions of senior management or rulership, given authority over other humans, that was when they turned the Anunnaki, their teachers, their developers, if you like, they looked upon them as if they were gods because of the things they could do. And they mistakenly started worshipping them, although they were never told to, and the Anunnaki certainly never claimed to be gods of any kind, consider themselves to be an advanced species, and they were trying to develop humans to match up to them in civilization, in knowledge, in understanding. And so the Great Pyramid was built when the Anunnaki were first on this planet, when they first came. It was one of their preliminary jobs was to build the Great Pyramid. It's in alignment with Mount Ararat and the Great Landing Platform in the Lebanon. The huge, that Zechariah Sitchin describes, it's this huge stone slab that still exists today. And that was their landing pad, if you like. And yeah, it was the landing pad. But the markers that you can see from space that were used for those landings were Mount Ararat and the Great Pyramid of Giza. So it served as a beacon that could be seen from space. It also, under the original capstone, had a great crystalline structure. It probably, now I don't know this scientifically, so I'm just guessing, but it probably was a crystalline structure in the form of a buckyball. You know, Buckminster Fuller's, what do you call it? Dodecahedron, right? That Buckminster Fuller developed, the five-sided shapes, because that's the shape of the universe, right? So it probably has a crystalline structure of that shape in the top. And that collected sunlight and powered it down through crystals all the way to the base where it produced electricity. Power, in other words, so it was a powerhouse and a signaling station. Those were the two main purposes of the Great Pyramid.
It's
and
a powerhouse.
Of course, it was built by anti-gravity.
So you're saying it's a powerhouse and a signaling station?
Yes, yes.
That's the purpose of why they built those.
That was not those. The Great Pyramid, period.
Okay,
only the
right.
Great Pyramid.
Okay.
All the others were copied by humans as mausoleums to bury their kings in, to bury the pharaohs.
Well, wait a minute. Wait. How did they build with all those stones moving and all that? How did they do that without...
Well,
they can't even do that today.
Look at them. I know. But if you actually look at them, all the others except the Great Pyramid oddly shaped, are very uneven, are much smaller blocks of stone and do not have the complexity of structure. And they're all falling down, basically, tumbling, right? Because they were not built properly. In other words, they were built by men with ropes and pulleys trying to copy the Great Pyramid. The Great Pyramid was built using anti-gravity technique.
Oh, okay. Okay. So that's how those large blocks were moved, with some anti-gravity
right.
techniques that they had.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you should tell the scientists of the world who are still in doubt about how that was built and the reason it was built. You should give them that information.
Well, I'm sure there's plenty of them know. But it's, you know, it's true. I was just reading by some other author a comment that he had made, and this is absolutely true, that most of human history from the time the Anuna left the planet, roughly 6,000 years ago, whenever it was, from the time they left, most human history came under the control of religious doctrine. In various fields throughout our time, we have been controlled by what the religions decided was true and what we should believe.
Excellent discussion. Let's talk about that. Most people, as you indicated, follow the Adam and Eve in a garden and the snake and the apple and da-da-da-da. You're saying none of that is true. And you're also saying that the history of the Anunnaki goes back 400, 500, a million years ago, when others who came up with the religion idea, the Protestants, the Methodists, and the Jehovah's Witness, they came up with some ideas of religion and made the history, but they took it from the history of the Anunnaki, from Sitchins. Is that where they got all this from? About Jesus' birth. Huh?
Yes, because they took it from the writings of the Sumerians. The Sumerians were great record keepers, and they wrote down. There are even pre-flood records in the Library of Nineveh, the great Library of Nineveh, the Ashurbanipal's library, that was uncovered in the 1920s that they discovered that? Thousands and thousands of written records of the history before that. The history of beings, sentient beings on this planet goes back a couple of million years at least. Certainly way back to the time of Atlantis. But after Atlantis, we've had polar shifts. We've had things that changed. But nonetheless, when the Anunnaki returned and let's say a million years ago. Let's just put a million years as a number on. And after half a million years of digging for their own gold, they were fed up with it. So they decided to engineer the local species. There was already the Homo erectus, the upright earth human, that they could take and genetically improve. So we know that humans have been on this planet for a very, very long time. And certainly at the time of Atlantis, the world was full of humans. I would venture to suggest, and I have no way of knowing this is true because my memory does not go back. In other words, I was not on the planet to my recollection prior to Atlantis. I was here and during Atlantis, but I don't have any recollection of being here before that. I have different memories before that. So if we go back to Atlantis, whenever that was, however long ago that was, there were many, many humans on the planet at that time. And there was high civilization. So the Anunnaki were living here. They were the Atlanteans. And there were also the Lemurians, right? So there was a division in which hemisphere they were living in, and they were all the Earth humans who were mostly, to my knowledge, represented by the Lemurian race. These were, so far as I recall it, humans at an advanced level, and I can only think, and I don't know if this is true or not. So this is something I'm not saying is true. I don't know, right? But I can only think that, you know how Darwin kept saying he's looking for a missing link, a missing link?
Yes, yes.
Well, it was a different kind of link he was looking for, but in a way, I think there is a gap in human history, because I think what became Cro-Magnon man was actually the more advanced species that were living as humans on the planet during the Atlantean period, probably as the Lemurian race at that time, and that because of the polar shift that occurred after that, after Atlantis, at some point there was a polar shift, that extinction and regeneration, right? And I think that what you had was that early human species taken back in their development and having to start evolving again. And we knew them at the later date, 400,000 years ago, as the advanced Cro-Magnon people. I think it's the same people, the same humans that were an advanced race during the time of Atlantis, and they went backwards because of the devastation of a polar shift. In much the same way that planet Earth would do now. You know, if we have another polar shift in this, in let's say in the next 20 years we had a polar shift, for one thing, we'd absolutely lose all our technology and 99% of all physical structures on the planet. So it would put the people back to Stone Age conditions.
All right.
This happens.
So, all right. But I wanted to stick to the story. And that's good. That's good. But I wanted to stick to, where did we get the Garden of Eden? Jesus died on the cross. Where did we get Adam and Eve and the snake and the apple and all of that? Who put that together? I mean, those stories and the flood and all of that. The flood happened in terms of the Anunnaki's history 400,000 years ago, way before the advent of Christ on the planet, or Jesus, right? Now, so...
Well, a long time ago, I would say that in the Anunnaki cosmology, my memory with regard to accuracy and numbers is not perfect, but I would say that the flood probably actually occurred about 40,000 years ago.
Okay.
And the AA flood, but there was another flood at a later date.
Okay, all right. But the person who developed that history, going back in the Sumerian civilization, thousands and tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, is Zachariah Sitchin's, right? He's one of the foremost authorities on being able to read those tablets, read that language. He was born in Russia, raised in Jerusalem, and he was extremely prolific in his research and writing.
Yeah.
All right, talk about him a minute. Just a minute.
Zachariah Sitchin is one of half a dozen scholars on the planet who in the 70s was able to translate the archaeological finds that related to Sumeria, the Sumerian culture, and the presence of the Anunnaki on the planet, including tablets from the library of Ashurbanipal in Nineveh. First of all, I was told that his translations were 98% accurate, and therefore we could take them as being true stories. There is a slant to them which has been raised in the 1990s, I believe, or the 90s earlier, right, up to the 1990s, with regard to Sitchin's work, maybe I should say since the 1990s and up to the present, with regard to that work, and that is that there is another man out there whose work I am not familiar with, but his name is O'Brien, and apparently he is one of the great scholars affiliated with the University of Pennsylvania, which is one of the foremost universities on the planet with regard to the Sumerian history and Sumerian language. They have a whole department has been devoted to this since the university began, and they are famous for their research. And this Dr. O'Brien was affiliated with them in some way. Could be wrong about that. But anyway, he is disagreeing with some of Dr. Sitchin's, Zachariah Sitchin's translations. And this may well be true, right? But in principle, what Zachariah Sitchin and wrote about in his books, we can take as true stories. Of that, I am sure. If there okay. were a few words here and there mistranslated, so be it.
Okay. Let me go to another platform. Now, when we talked about Jesus, you believe he was an Anunnaki who left his chair. He was on the council, and he decided to come here to help the human being establish a degree of ethics and moral principles and loving ways towards himself, others, and his God, right?
Right.
Am I saying? Okay.
That's good enough.
Okay. So, he came here and on a mission, when did he come here on the mission? Was it 10,000 years ago, 6,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago?
No, he came just over 2,000 years ago.
Okay, gotcha. All right. So when he came here, what happened to that whole mission? What did he accomplish and what did he fail to accomplish 2,000 years ago?
Okay. He came as the descendant of David and the future rightful king to overthrow Herod and take over the rulership of what was then Israel, right? What is today Israel. And he came as the rightful prince of Judah to take the throne away from Herod, who was a foreigner, remember. If I remember correctly, Herod was a Persian. And he wanted to get the people of Jerusalem, the Jewish people, to throw out the foreigner, make him king, and then he would cooperate to the benefit of the Jewish people with the Pax Romana, with the relationship with Rome. And although it's not within my scope of knowledge, I understand there is a great deal of material, written material extant today, which clearly spells out the relationship between the earthly family of Jesus and the Roman Emperor Tiberius and the Kingdom of Great Britain, and that a man called Lawrence Gardner, who is a historian, he died fairly recently, a well-known historian and genealogist of excellent repute, has actually written many books about the genealogy of Christ, well worth reading books, and one of them explains or talks about much of this relationship between Christ's family, the Pax Romana, the Romans in general, and the politics of the day. So that was Christ's original intention. It is never the intention of the high evolved beings to create anarchy and chaos. Quite the reverse. They are always about creating harmony and balance. And so was Christ. But because he was not willing to join the zealots and take up a sword and start fighting the Roman soldiers and killing them, and because the Sanhedrin didn't like the fact that he was more knowledgeable than they were, and they were afraid that he would essentially take their jobs, right, get them all thrown out of the council, the Sanhedrin, they, as you know, killed him, or tried to. They certainly nailed him to a cross and tortured him and did a lot of terrible things to his physical body. And So did he fail in his mission? Well, no, because part of the mission said, but if I am rejected in this, I will get an opportunity to return and put things right. Now, opportunity to return, those are a key idea, because if we say this is 2,000 plus years ago, when does the opportunity to return come? Well, the opportunity comes one circuit later, less the time that was already accounted for. In other words, if the orbit is 3,600 years, then somewhere between 2,500 and 3,000 years after the crucifixion is the opportune time for the return. And that's just about where we are now. And that we are, in fact, in the time frame of the return of Christ. He can turn up any day now and take over on this planet. Presumably, they would do it behind the scenes. We wouldn't all instantly know about it, but we will come to realize it when the changes take place on this planet, when the evil guys that are manipulating things become disbanded and can no longer control us. Because the key factor in all of this to do with the Anuna and their relationship to Earth humans is that they have gifted us with the opportunity for immortality, and in order to achieve that immortality, we need independence and freedom to evolve ourselves to that level of experience, to that level of frequency. So it means that all these untruths that have locked us down in a state of subjection to belief structures without understanding what they are or necessarily agreeing or disagreeing with them, all those have to be disbanded. All those kinds of mental thought restrictions have to be removed from our minds so that we can use our God-given brains, think for ourselves, and choose to become Christ-like. Choose to be able to do all the things that he could do, just like he told us. And we are now in that time where this is happening. This is happening as we speak.
All right. So he was promised that if he failed, if he didn't achieve his objective the first time around after leaving the seat of the council, right, that he could come back.
Right.
And then in this section of the quadrant of the universe and rule over it and bring it to its rightful place. Right?
Right.
Okay.
Correct.
All right. And so he might do that yet. It hasn't been done yet because we're still fighting down here with the Democratic Party and the Republican Party and the independents and knockdown drag out. But
that's true. But remember that we think in terms of hours, days, and weeks. Those beings think in terms of years and decades and centuries, right?
True.
And what I am saying is that there is a lot more going on behind the scenes right now than most of us are aware of.
All right.
There is a dismantling of the evil structure that has ruined this planet for so long. It has been pulled down and torn apart, and we are seeing it in some respects. One of the respects that we're seeing it in, and a really important one, is that people are no longer believing everything that they're being told. They're asking questions, and they're demanding answers. And with each question and each answer, a little bit more of the lie is dismantled. So
well,
it is being pulled apart steadily.
Okay. Well, let me address that then, what you just said. That people are beginning to have their eyes open. It's like in the Bible, it says, those things that are hidden will come to the light of day, right? Okay. So
right.
The, in terms of entities like the Anunnaki or the Greys or the Reptilians or the Nordics or the Palladians or whomever else, the Blue Avians, and goes on, that there are many entities coming to this planet for whatever reason. You can tell us the reasons, right? At this particular time in the existence of this planet, many entities, but yet that information has been kept from many people up until recently. The New York Times article of December of 2017, recently, a few months ago, the Pentagon says, oh, there's some things in the sky flying around. We don't know what they are. Of course they know what they are, or they are. So now it's a soft disclosure about that there are other entities besides the human being on this planet in existence. Talk about that in a wee bit, if you will.
Well, of course, there have always been extraterrestrials on this planet. And, you know, one of the reasons I think, I mean, we hear so much about the bad guys, the dark side, who are supporting the control of organizations like the Illuminati, the Cabal, and so on. And of course, we always have the reptilians with us, who are really number one bad guys, and they work with the Nazis under Antarctica that Dr. Sala wrote so prolifically about. And so, yes, we know that there is always the dark side supporting the governments of the world, and they have done this since the day the Anunnaki left. They have swooped in and whispered in the ears of governments for time immemorial. And why are they doing this? Well, because they want control of planet Earth. And the governments that have taken their technology in exchange for making allowances for all the things that these extraterrestrials wish to do to us, including abductions and so on and so forth, but primarily control. It's about control. The dark side, all the dark governments, all the dark manipulated things do it because they want power and control over the populace at large. And how have they wielded this throughout history? They've wielded it through religion. Remember, until fairly recently, the last 200 or 300 years, common people could not read or write in the most part. The human race was fairly illiterate across the board, right? Ordinary people did not read and write. It was the church people, the clerics, the ministers. These were the educated people. These were the ones with the aristocracy who did the reading and writing and told the peasants what they believed and what they should do and how to do it. They were the dictators of everything, right? And the government controlled the religions. The governments tell the religion. Look at Britain. The king or queen of Britain is the head of the church. And the church is embedded in almost every university there is throughout Britain, coloring and really directing the thinking of what goes on, right? The way, telling people the way they should think, right? So this has gone on throughout history. And in every country in the world, we have all been manipulated through religion. That's what controls us. And so these extraterrestrials have used that in order to get their fingers in the pie for control of planet Earth and its most valuable resource, the human beings that are on the planet, because we are a valuable resource. Throughout the universe, we are a valuable resource.
How
now,
so?
Because we are an intelligent, usable species. We make great slaves. We make great servants because we have brains and we have been conditioned to do as we are told. That's what... Tell me a religion on this planet that does not tell you, do as you are told. Every single one tells you, do as you are told. Doesn't matter whether you're following Christianity or Islam or, you know, Confucius. It doesn't matter what the foundation of the religion was designed to give you freedom. But what the manipulators of the religions, the churches, the temples, the synagogues, what they have done is turn those into powerhouses of control throughout.
So somebody said the religion is the opium of the... Now, how did that start? Let's talk about Constantine. Go ahead, talk about that. How they took...
Well, Constantine, of course, was late in the picture. And the story is, you know, that he saw this cross in the heavens and overnight became a Christian on his deathbed. But the reality, I think, is much different to that. It was politically expedient for him to declare himself as a Christian, so he gets aid and assistance from a different group of soldiers, put him in a different position as far as these battles were concerned. So it was an entirely political movement on his part. There's no doubt about that. And of course, you had all the history of Rome, the Roman Church, the popes, and at the same time, you have, you know, the descendants of Ishmael and the rise of Islam and so on. So religion has done nothing for humanity across this planet except divide them. That's the only thing, control them and divide them. And what is the best way to control any situation? By dividing the participants in it. Divide and conquer. That's what you do. And so behind all the governments and all the plotting are these, I want to say, dark-intentioned extraterrestrials who whisper in the government's ear, telling them what to do. And behind those governments and listening to these extraterrestrials are the cabals which actually run the world, taking advantage of the technology that the extraterrestrials have fed them throughout the ages. This is not just Silicon Valley new. This has been ever since the Anunna left the planet. But they're coming back. And so there is a reason why a lot of these extraterrestrials as well, the dark extraterrestrials, and particularly beings like the reptilians, they are not potentially immortal in the same way that the Anunna are. They can extend life, they can live for 1,000 years, they can do all kinds of clever technological things, but they don't have the potential to become Christed beings, Christ-like, immortal in the true sense of the word. And what is the true sense of the word? Immortality and immortal. What can an immortal do that these beings who can extend their life 1,000 years or more can do? Well, the difference is that immortals can live both within time and without time. In other words, they can exist with self-awareness as sentient beings, whether the universe physically exists or not. That is the difference between mortals and true immortals. Mortals, which are all the humans throughout the universe except the reptilians, all those humans are mortal in that they reincarnate over and over again, and some of them, through their advanced science and technology, have learned to extend their lives thousands of years. But it doesn't give them the opportunity to be immortal. It doesn't give them the opportunity to live outside time, only from incarnation to incarnation. It's a huge difference, and for all normal purposes, it's not a difference that matters very much, unless you already have a mindset that is thinking and understands the concept of timelessness, of infinity, and of the possibility of an end of infinity, of the possibility of the end of time. of the possibility even of the end of your solar system, of your sun dying and your whole solar system going extinct. So the idea of immortality is really a very important one if you begin to think in those terms. Most people are probably quite satisfied to live one lifetime. Certainly some people enjoy the idea of reincarnating and having many lifetimes. But the idea of being immortal maybe doesn't cross most people's minds. And yet it is a vast universe, vast. And there are unlimited possibilities in it.
Okay.
And that
Talk
is
about
something
that.
Which is understood by most extraterrestrials. And that's why they're clinging to Earth.
Okay.
Because
okay.
we have that possibility.
So you're saying that even if this planet ends up going to pieces, you know, falling apart, that the entities who are here or who have developed immortality will still exist in other parts and vastness of the universe?
Yes.
Is that what,
absolutely,
is that what you're
yes.
saying? Wow.
Yes.
That's a big statement. That's a big statement.
It's
so
a
how
true
would,
statement.
How would one do that? How would one continue life after life after life, whether it be on this planet, on Mars or Andromeda or any, and still exist in this vastness of the universe as a
well,
conscious
that's
being?
Life. That's life. That is life. And when we develop our own soul, when we add energy to our own soul, then we are adding the personal capability of hanging on to our self-awareness, to knowing who we are. And we can all do it. Look at me. You know me, Russell. You know that I'm nobody special at all. I'm not even in modern terms well-educated. I never went to college. I don't have any degrees or anything extraordinary. And yet I have continuing consciousness for tens of thousands of years. If I can do it, anybody can do it.
Yeah, but Tompkins told us that the information that we got in schools, I mean, come on, now religious institutions, colleges, universities, is all false. He told us
most of it is. It's false in the sense of it's, I don't want to say that it's all lies, right? So much as it is mistaken, manipulated information, there are cores of truth, nations and seeds of truth in all of it, maybe. But most education is designed to manipulate you and coerce
and
you into becoming what your government wants you to be.
Okay.
Because you are your government's human resource that they
Excellent.
Are going to channel into a way which will support them.
So we are worker bees for the government. Now, this is nothing new because if we were to go back to Constantine, may I, he had his group of people, the priests and the rabbis and all of whom came to his bidding to put the Bible together, which is another controlled element, right? Yes or no?
Yes, yes.
But talk about that so people can understand what happened.
Well, most of the Bible was put together between 400 and 600 years after the advent of the stories that it's telling about. Right? And the stories themselves were rewrites of the more ancient stories from the civilization of the Sumerians, who wrote the stories on the clay tablets, many of which were, as we said, in the Library of Nineveh, but in many other great archival libraries. There were 5 or 6 of them in the Middle East alone at the time of the Library of Nineveh that are actually being discovered and uncovered. The ancient cities of the Bible, the Old Testament, the ancient cities had great libraries, many of them, and are being uncovered to this day with these written documents from the Sumerian period. And those documents tell the story of the pre-Sumerian period of the ancient history, and even the before-flood history of the kings and rulers that were on earth at that time. So all these stories have been mishmashed and put together hundreds and even thousands of years after the actual events. And then a selection of these stories were chosen and translated into the Hebrew language, or rewritten in the Hebrew language, and form the books of the Old Testament of the Bible. And some of the most valuable stories in there are, of course, the Psalms. The Psalms encompass many of the stories of these ancient times. They were put together by David for Solomon in song. They were made into songs. Just like, you know, today we remember the songs from World War I and World War II. In those days, they remembered songs that told stories from previous eras. So the Bible is simply a series of, or a collection of stories drawn together from multiple sources and then chosen by a group of people to form first the Old Testament of the Bible, and then at a later date by the bishops of the new Christian churches, several hundred years after Christ, another bunch of stories were put together, added onto the Old Testament as the New Testament, and these were the stories that the new religion decided would be the stories to tell of their religion. So in any effect, they are simply stories out of historical times put together by a bunch of men who decided that this was what you should believe. The most reliable stories are the most ancient. The stories of, you know, the Garden of Eden, of Noah, of the flood, of Ezekiel and his visions, of Job. These are really the most important stories to say, what were they telling us? And then you get into the New Testament, and basically the only thing of real value in the New Testament are words that in a concordance type Bible you will see written in red, which are the words attributed to Christ himself. And if you take those out and study those, then those are going to give you some real insight into what he was trying to teach. And again, I even have an adjustment to that, although of course I cannot verify it because I'm not Christ, right? But my extraterrestrial friends told me that all those words attributed to Christ were the most accurately and carefully translated by the scribes throughout history and the least adulterated by the churches and the bishops themselves, simply because they were almost afraid, you might say, to alter too much the words of Christ. So it's pretty near what he actually was reported of him saying, except the teachings about the matter of divorce. And if you look in any Bible, you will find something like a page or a page and a half devoted to all the rules and regulations regarding a divorce. And I was told categorically, Christ never said any such nonsense. That was entirely a fiction of St. Paul, who made it that way because that's what the churches decided they wanted, to keep men in control and to put women in their place, and that it should be quite clear to everybody that Saul of Tarsus, or Paul as he became known, was in fact an out-and-out misogynist who had no respect for women whatsoever, and that he wrote the entire diatribe about the matters of divorce. That's wow. What I was told.
Wow. All right. Well, you know, it's, I just wanted you to go over that because a lot of people who are Baptists and Seventh-day Adventists, Pentecostal, or Catholic or whatever, they don't understand that history, that all of that was put together in recent times, if you will, last 2,000 years or so, after the death of Jesus, when in, they were rewrites of the tablets that were found 100,000, 400,000, maybe a million years ago from the Sumerian culture. So that's an awakening.
Well, the Sumerian culture was actually 6,000 years ago.
Okay,
and that's
6,000.
When most of the tablets, but a lot of those tablets in the libraries with the king lists were written almost immediately after the flood by the rulers of Nineveh and recorded their oral history of the kings, the Anunnaki lords who ruled before the flood. So yes, it's pretty ancient history. It certainly goes back, let's say, at least 20,000 years of written record prior to the advent of Christ. At least 30,000 BC, those records, written records, go.
So we're coming up on 2025. Do you think the Watchers, as they are known sometimes, are close to understanding when Jesus will be coming back? Do you think they know?
Well, their mathematical calculation for the correct astrological alignment in our universe will take place at the end of 2025 through the early part of 2026. And that period, that was their closest, best mathematical calculation made only 20 years ago. So it has a high probability accuracy. And that being the case, that marks the end of this piece of human history for Homo sapiens sapien. In other words, our history on planet Earth comes to an end. It began so many thousand years ago with the rulership of Adapa, or the Adam, right? The rulership of the Adam taking over on this planet, and that rulership of men coming to an end at the end of that cycle. It begins again soon thereafter. I think the Bible tells us it's, you know, 3 days and three nights of darkness will descend upon the planet or some such thing. The way it was explained to me is that it is an astrological alignment in the universe which allows for new rulership in our quadrant of the universe. And it also marks the end of the old human history, this era of our history, and then a new era or a new time frame begins for us shortly thereafter. So if their mathematical calculations are correct, then we could be very, very near the point when our future completely changes and we have wonderful new opportunity potential in front of us. If for those who don't make it or are not prepared to move into the higher frequency that this alignment, this astrological alignment in the universe begins, brings to this quadrant of the universe, it's a different operational frequency. And if we are spiritually ready to move forward into that, then we will enjoy the benefits of it. If we are not ready to move forward with it, if we have not laid claim to our immortality and said, yes, I am who I am and I want to move forward in this progressive movement, then if we're not ready to say that, if we're not ready to do that, then we will fall back. And in much the same way as I have already stated, I think, you know, at the time of Atlantis, the existing humanity on the planet fell backwards and had to climb up again. In the same way, I think humanity on this earth may well fall backwards in time because this alignment, this astrological event, this really truly cosmic event, could well have a deleterious effect on all our technology. And if that happens, then we as a species left on the planet could certainly fall backwards many generations and have to climb back up again.
Okay, all right. And that may be, because when we look at things, they seem to be coming to a point of collision. There's a lot of turmoil out there, economically, socially, political, psychologically, dealing with the political wherewithal, the Democratic, the Republican, and independent parties and all that. It's a lot of argument, a lot of chaos, a lot of infighting, a lot of disruption, if you will. Nothing is running smooth these days. And it would seem that when we look at the economy of things, inflation is going to take over as it has in places like Venezuela and Peru and El Salvador and Guatemala, that it is a possibility that the people of America will suffer a lot of those slings and arrows of outrageous fortune that those other countries that I just mentioned are undergoing as we speak. Do you see that as a possibility? Lack of food, lack of water.
I see it as a high probability. I would put that as an 85% probability, much, much more than a possibility. I think we are going to be in a worsening period over the next 1, 2, 3 years than we have known for a very long time. The rest of the planet is already in disastrous condition. Why would we imagine that America will not suffer the same? You know, you can only be isolationist so far. And probably here in the United States, we have as much corruption going on and behind the scenes adverse manipulation of any time on or any race on the planet. We know this. We know that there's a great deal of deep state, dark matter manipulation goes on constantly. When you look at the things that our rulers have done for generations, the worship of Baphomet, for example, is an absolute manifestation of evil that the wealthiest, greatest leaders of our country have regularly gone and attended as an annual ritual for a long time now, for several generations. So we know that this intrinsic darkness is here. And the idea that we won't have to suffer for that is an illusion. Of course we will have to suffer for it. You know, when it comes to cosmic justice, there is no such thing as a free lunch. What you buy into, what you pay service to, is the meal that you are served. And we have all been paying lip service to Maimon, especially in America, for a very long time. You know, everything, even the expression, the almighty dollar, is a well-known expression. Everybody throughout the world knows the expression, the almighty dollar, the great greenback that we all worship. You know, it has the eye of God on the front of it, right? K as far as it goes, seeking abundance and success and prosperity. These are great aims for any society. But the society has to be civilized at the same time. Its spiritual evolution has to run along parallel with its material abundance. And sadly, this is not the case, not the case for planet Earth, and certainly not the case for the great country of America. We have lost our spiritual way, so that now our sense of spirituality is really condemned to little better than raving priests standing in pulpits screaming, you're all going to hell, you're all going to hell, which doesn't help the picture at all. But it is true to say that right now, at this moment in our history, we each and every one of us have the opportunity to choose. And it is an important choice, because it is a choice that you are making as an individual, I and every one of us are making as individuals, potentially for the next 50,000 years of evolution and development, because that's about the cycles that this planet runs it. So you are making a choice for how you will spend not just the next 6 months or the next 10 years, but the next 50,000 years of your life experiences. So do you want to spend them going back potentially to a Stone Age existence, digging yourself constantly out of terrible situations, or do you want to move forward into an enlightened higher frequency, experiencing life at an even better than the best possible life on this planet as it exists today? Because if you want to move forward to something better, then it's time to tie yourself to the Creator. Tie yourself to the teachings that Christ gave you, gave all of us, so that we could move forward. Hang your hat on that coat peg. Do not hang it on the peg of the elected government in Washington in the hopes that they'll send you another free check and put money in your bank. Because trust me, that's not going to help you at all. Don't hang your hat on the peg of the extraterrestrials who can promise you a 1,000-year life, because all they have to offer you is technology. And what we are speaking of is not technological. Their technology cannot move you forward to a higher frequency. It can extend your life as it is. It can make things go on for a very long time, no different than the way they are. But it cannot alter your soul's frequency, the frequency of your soul, the intent, the hope, the prayer of your soul, your deepest soul's desires. That is what moves you forward to a higher experience of life. Not all the technology that all the extraterrestrials in the universe can offer you can do that for you. Only you making the choice as the deepest desire of your own soul can take you forward in frequency to a higher experience. The rest is only technology, and that technology cannot pass the space-time continuum break, which is coming to Earth.
Right. So I'm thinking in terms of, I was listening to you, that Laura Eisenhower, as we have played her before, and she's got her own, if people want to listen to what she's talking about, I would suggest go to Google Laura Eisenhower, and she has her own podcast, and she talks about this and interviews a lot of people. But I just wanted to play a little clip about her. She talks about the fear that's developed on this planet.
Yeah,
that binds people to not improve and develop their self-esteem and self-image and self-control.
Understanding of really what this positive timeline really means. And it's not just like some timeline we stumble upon and we get lucky. It's who we really are and the path we've always been walking. And so these agendas, through fear, have tried to steer us away from that. Because through fear, we give our power away, we buy into the money system, and we look outside of ourselves. And that's not liberation. Liberation is understanding what we're made of on the inside and activating those abilities through being highly conscious in every moment. You know, understanding that every moment is sacred. The words that we use, the way we treat each other, the food we put into our body, the lifestyles that we lead, I mean, that all, you know, comes down to it. And when we start to do things on our own terms and we start to recognize that we do have free will, and only they can manipulate us out of that, they can't actually take it, then what is there to fear anymore? Because it's not about fearing death. We know we've died before. It's about being very discerning about whether or not we are being controlled, and to really step back and ask ourselves those questions. What is controlling us? What is ruling our moods? How do we feel when we wake up in the morning? What are we passionate about? And what are our excuses for not following our heart and our dreams? And start to look at, okay, well, those are excuses. Those are controls. And we don't have to buy into that. And so it's understandable that people get lost in this stuff, but it's a game, and that game is the same game the negative ego plays with us. And the minute we start to say, you know what, you need to follow the guidance of higher self, then that's when the purification starts to happen. And when each of us does that, in terms of how we relate to how we create abundance and how we take care of our survival space, we can let go of the governments and start to say, wait a second, I have much more trust in the universe and spirit and the God goddess that lives within and everywhere to provide exactly what our needs are. And that's part of the spontaneity of embracing the mystery and also being highly creative in how we set our intentions and how we visualize things that we want to manifest. And then push out all self-doubt, all fear, and everything, what mom has to say, what so-and-so has to say, you know, the projections of, oh, you're crazy, you'll never be able to do that, and just filter it out. It has nothing to do with you. And that's liberation, is to just live your truth and to say, who cares what anybody else thinks, but to at least devote oneself to integrity so that the energy flow is not creating karma and not creating more filth, because it's not about being selfish. It's about finding balance, understanding unity consciousness, and understanding that this is part of natural law and universal laws, and that we are here as humans to learn how to return to that. And it's not a very easy place to learn, but we have completed a lot of these lessons, and so it's going to be easier more than any other time in our existence to move out of fear, because we're in alignment with the galactic plane right now. Mm-hmm. People are really, really waking up, and it's far easier to be liberated, even if we witness particular scenarios that seem like it's taking us down into doom and gloom. Spirit, you can't trump it. There's nothing more powerful. So we'll never lose connection with it, but the illusion of separation can cause our creative energy to pull us into traps and to take us down roads that will delay us from the inevitable, which is our return home to source.
Jillian, you're on. Jillian, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Yes.
Any comments?
Well, of course, you know, I've heard that before, and I agree with that young lady totally. What she says is absolutely correct. The thing that binds almost all of us, indeed, I will say all of us, one way or another, is fear. And, you know, I think I was fortunate at an early age. I remember well, and she just reminded me, one of the things that my mother taught me when I was just a little girl, she said, it never matters what other people think. It only matters what you know. And this is so true, because our knowing, our actual, the things that we truly know are true, this comes from our soul. This is understanding ourselves and knowing ourselves at soul level. And the soul always knows right from wrong. We are born that way. Every single soul knows the difference between right and wrong. The thing is that through our lives, whether it is fear that manipulates us into doing it, sometimes it's even good intentions that manipulate us into doing it, but we justify almost anything that we want to do. Even though at soul level, we know it's not the best thing to be doing. We somehow manage to talk ourselves into it. We're all great at that. You know, David once said to me, you don't just have a law firm in your head. You have a whole, an attorney in your head. You have a whole law firm that can justify just about everything you want to do. I guess I was making excuses about something. And this is true of all of us. We all manage to excuse most things. But it is also true that the biggest control factor in our lives is fear. And it is mostly fear of what other people will say and think. To actually live fearlessly is the greatest gift we can give ourselves. But I have to also say that it is the hardest thing to do. It is almost impossible. On this planet, at this time in history, as a normal human being, to live without fear. It is the ultimate challenge that we are all dealing with, because we all have fears. We fear we will lose our jobs. We fear there won't be enough money to buy food. We fear that we can't pay for our medicine. But almost all our fears are surrounded by the concepts that are imposed upon us about money. This, you know, that old saying, money is the root of all evil. And if we really think about it, it pretty much is. And that's why there is a huge advantage in living in a community as I live in today, a small rural town in western Montana, where people help one another. And so nobody really fears going hungry here because there are enough growers and hunters that some neighbor will make sure that everybody is fed. And so we have in these rural areas of America, across the whole length and breadth of the country, I'm sure, small communities that do support one another. And this is what we need to seek out and align ourselves with, where we will find the best of humanity in these smaller communities. And these communities can be in big cities. You know, you can have, as I believe they have in New York, they have small communities where they are predominantly ethnic communities, like a group of Italians where they all know one another and help one another. Anywhere where you have good neighbors, you have the best opportunity of ridding yourself of the fears that control all of us. And it is true to say that although we in many ways fear the government, certainly people like the NSA or the IRS or the CIA or any of those horrible three-letter agencies that spy on every aspect of our lives, we maybe all have underlying fear of those. But even that we can shed, because what is the worst thing they can do to us? The very worst thing they can do to us is kill us. And if we are dead to this particular life, we have no worries whatsoever, because what comes after this experience, no matter, even if it's not the most wonderful we could anticipate, it's still, I promise you, a lot better than most people's lives on the planet today. We always move into something that's an improvement. So really, we don't have anything to fear. And if we can do as that young lady was saying, Ms. Eisenhower was saying, and start to recognize the true shining stars that our souls really are, and step into that role, then we can shed fear. I had a colleague, Sayada, and she used to say a wonderful thing when she was doing lectures, and it's always stuck in my mind. She would say, so I admonish you, get down off the crosses that you have accepted and created and start being the stars that you really are. And this is, and crosses and burdens that are in our lives are there because we have created them. We have taken them up. We have chosen them. And most of them weigh us down and practically bury us in the ground. But remember what Christ said. If you take up his yoke, it's very light. The burden is easy to carry. He's telling you just what I'm telling you. Again, I'm repeating essentially what he said. Set aside all these fears that are weighing you down, all these burdens, and put some faith in your Creator. Have trust. Have trust that what Christ said was true and that he meant it, that you are more important than the lilies in the field, and look how well they're taken care of, that you are of more value than the birds in the air, and yet the Creator knows every bird that falls. Do you think you're not worth more than some little bird flying about? Of course you are. You are valuable. Your soul is one of the great notes of the song of the universe. And that's you, your vibratory frequency sends out a sound into the universe. And it's up to you to make that a sweet sound. And the only thing that sours that sound is fear. So we really, all of us, we need to make a big effort to let go of our fears and let our light shine out for everybody's benefit.
All right. What I'm going to do as we come to the end of the hour, we have about 5 minutes, but here's a 2-minute suggestion, and then you can comment on that because it's you saying saving self.
And, oh, at the meeting, Ted Kennedy was there. He was sitting next to me. Ted, he says, George, you're really good with money. We're going to send you out to all the state meetings to raise money for the party, and you're going to have a real good time. Well, I had taken my daughter so they could go skiing. One of the daughters looked just like you, frankly. Anyway, Ted looks at her and he says, wow, she come walking in the room. He says, I want to go to bed with that. And I said, no, you don't, Ted. That's my daughter and she's 14. And his response was, I don't care. I was mad. So I got up. I didn't say another word to Ted. I walked across the room. I'm with Pierre Trudeau and his wife, Pierre, the Prime Minister of Canada. Pierre and I were doing okay, but then I'm looking down at his wife. There's a little cigar box, a little half cigar box full of white powder.
You mean cocaine?
I mean cocaine. I'm sitting there and I said, I don't know. This was on a Friday and this is a 4-day weekend because I was supposed to be in on the meetings. And my ego was on the ground. I mean, I was with Bill Levitt the previous week. You don't know who he is, but that's Levittown, New York, and Levittown, Pennsylvania. Bill Levitt. We're discussing building cities. I was getting ready to do $100 million project back at that time. Anyway, I said my ego's on the line because I'm sitting here playing with that. And then over the meeting, they discuss what they have planned for the United States. Get World War III started. Again, the copy of the contract that I had, I printed it in one of my books even, so people could see the contract and read it for themselves that they want to reduce the population. It's incredible what they want to do. But this is a worldwide deal. Well, I end up, because of the connections that all of a sudden started appearing to me from the extraterrestrials and on, I said, we have a chance. We have a chance to stop all of this if you and I can waken everybody on this planet so we can get them to rethink about this story. But everybody has been so programmed, somebody else is going to save them. It's a program. Nobody's going to save them.
Okay, you have to save yourself, huh? So as we close,
right.
I'll let you close. That was George. I'm sorry, I thought there was another one, but that's all right. It was still apropos. But that was George, and if you want to see more information of what George is saying and doing, I would go to nohoax.net or just put George Green UFO on Google and he'll come up and you can listen to many, 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 many hours that he was here to teach us about how to save ourselves. He says, that's our responsibility. You can save your own soul. And so you're saying that through saving Jesus, and that's another good book people should read, any other comment before we close in the next minute?
No, I think we pretty well said it all. Just to reiterate, salvation is definitely a DIY program, DIY, do it yourself program. And Christ gave you all the information that you need that explains this to you. And the book by Michael Ledwith called Saving Jesus is actually a step-by-step process that walks you through it. So there's no excuse for us as human beings any longer. We only need to read two books, the New Testament with the words of Christ and Michael Ledwith's book, and we can save ourselves and claim our immortality. And so we really have no excuses anymore for not doing it. It'll be no use complaining later. I didn't know, because everybody can know now with very little effort.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Really appreciate you being here. And so here we are. Do-it-yourself program. Save your own soul. Thanks for being on Blog Talk. Okay.
Yes, thank you.
And don't look for anybody out here to save you other than yourself. You know, even Christ said that. He said, "What I do, you can do, and greater. And what you sow, you shall reap."